It's a letter no homeowner wants to receive, a notice from the city about a code violation. Depending on the problem, getting your house up to code can be expensive and time-consuming, but there is help available if you qualify. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about which code violations are most common and all that help that's available are Cincinnati Buildings and Inspection Department Deputy Director Ed Cunningham. Welcome back, Ed.
Well, thank you, Lucy May. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. We also have Covington Housing Development Specialist and Housing Manager Archie Ice. Thanks for being here, Archie.
Yes, thank you. Hello.
And we have Federal Grants Manager for the City of Covington, Jeremy Wallace. Thank you for being here too, Jeremy.
Thank you.
Okay, Ed, what are the most common code violations for residential homes in Cincinnati?
Well, a lot of them have to do with water infiltration into the house, into the leaking gutters, and it can do a lot of damage, unfortunately, in anything from the homeowners mostly are going to be outside things, owner-occupant type homes, and then in rental properties, there's all kinds of problems, plumbing leaks, HVAC issues in the winter, and just about anything that can break on a house, there's probably a code that covers it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I know. I feel like just about everything's broken on one of my houses at one point or another. Is that what you see in Covington too, Archie?
Yes, very similar. We deal with a lot of leaking roofs, gutters that have fallen or damaged, and sometimes people have painting issues.
Mm. Oh, like chipped painting?
Chipped and peeling paint, right.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about why that's a problem? And I know it looks bad, but why is that a serious code violation to address?
Because it leads to further deterioration of the home, like if you don't paint the house. And also, since most of the Covington's housing stock is historic, it could deal with lead paint issues as well, which is a further health issue.
Yeah,
if not taken care of.
Is paint a problem in Cincinnati too, Ed?
Well, it's not like a life safety thing, of course, but it's certainly something we run into, and the unprotected wood or metal on the outside of a house will rust and decay unless it's like redwood or something like that.
Yeah. What about painted brick? I feel like both Cincinnati and Covington have a lot of painted brick. Cincinnati has a lot of that soft brick, doesn't it?
We do.
In historic properties in particular?
That's right. It's like the clay brick. It is very soft. Some people do paint it to keep the water out. It's like a sponge almost, that old soft brick, and it was heated at a low temperature.
Yeah. Ed, what typically triggers an inspection that leads to a code violation? I could be wrong, but I don't think you have enough inspectors to just kind of do a lot of inspections proactively. Maybe I'm wrong about that. How does that usually work?
Nope, you're absolutely right about that. It's going to be complaint-driven, for the vast majority of things. We have a few proactive programs like our fire escape safety program and a facade program. But by and large, we're talking about citizens calling in to file a complaint about some housing condition or residential condition or even commercial maintenance condition.
Is that typically how it works in Covington too? Is it based on residents calling, neighbors calling?
Most often, yes. We sometimes do targeted sweeps, but more often than not, it is resident-driven. Yes.
Yeah. And what would be behind the targeted sweeps? Is it like just kind of focusing on particular neighborhoods? Tell us about that.
Yes, we can. We do have a staffed code enforcement department. So each officer has a specific area of the city. So we do have a good number of those doing active sweeps in their neighborhoods, just keeping watch and then talking to the neighbors and talking to the actual homeowners to let them know that this could be an issue. We do have these programs that could help you. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I promise we're going to talk about those programs that can help people. We definitely want to get that information out there. We also have joining us Middletown Communications Manager Clayton Castle. Thanks for being here, Clayton.
Thank you for having me.
Clayton, we've been talking about code violations in Cincinnati, the city of Covington. What does Middletown tend to see most often when it comes to code violations? Are there problems that come up more than others?
Yeah, we have quite a few common themes that we see in the city of Middletown. Obviously, overgrown grass and weeds, we get a lot of those. Trash in the yard, some roofs that need repaired. We see even as much as some people go as far as putting their cars in their front lawn. We don't like seeing that, obviously. Decks and porches that need repaired and the like. So those are some of our common violations.
Yeah. And do you typically find out about those violations, or the building inspectors find out because neighbors have called and said, hey, this is not cool?
Yeah. Most of the time our code violations get called into us or sent to us somehow through our code enforcement department and our community and economic development. We do have code enforcement specialists that do go out into the community on occasion, not very often, but most of the time our tips do come into us.
Okay. We're talking about building code violations and local programs to help residents make repairs. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. I promise we're going to talk about these programs because that's what everybody wants to hear, but I got to talk a little bit more about, you know, why people do need help. Ed, what are some of the most common reasons people can't or don't make the repairs that they need to make to comply with a code, the city's code, and you know, take care of a violation?
Well, some of the most heartbreaking cases we run into is, let's say, the elderly man or woman who has to, at the end of the month, decide whether to fix the house or buy their medicine. You know, that's just not a choice people can make. So those folks, their only way it's going to get done is if they get some help. So, and, you know, a lot of times the outsides of these houses look pretty rough and the neighbors feel like it's hurting their property values, you know. And, you know, there's all kinds of cases. Some people are just downright don't like government intervention and just refuse to do it. Others, it's mostly going to be a money thing with a lot of people.
Yeah, because these repairs can get pretty expensive.
Absolutely. And it just seems to be going up and up.
Yeah, yeah. What do you find in Covington? What are the reasons? Is it mostly economic that people don't make the repairs they need to make?
Right. It's mostly economic. Elderly and veterans. Also, it might be young people who have purchased a house. It was looking fine when they purchased it. Their family happened, their job happened, and they didn't plan for those other repairs on the exterior. It just got out of hand. So they might need a little helping hand.
Yeah. Owning a home can be expensive, that's right, for sure, because you don't get to call the landlord to say, hey, there's a hole in the roof. Clayton, is it mostly economic in Middletown too? What do you all see there?
Yeah, I think the common theme here with all of our communities are you see that there's an economic disadvantage with some of these populations. You know, in Middletown, we have if you take our schools, for example, a large percentage of our students are eligible for free or reduced lunch. So you look at the median income of all of our households, and I know we'll talk about the programs later, but a large segment of our population actually qualifies for our program, which is an income qualifier, has an income qualifier. So it is definitely an economic kind of barrier.
Yeah. Well, and if those, again, I promise we're going to get to the programs, but if those violations continue, does that mean fines in most cities too? I mean, do those fees and fines kind of start to pile up?
Yeah, we have, you know, somewhat of an aggressive approach to it because we do value the eliminating blight in the city. With that being said, we do everything we can to work with the homeowners, especially those that are in need. But yeah, they can be substantial fines over time. And we're a little more aggressive with, you know, property owners that own a whole bunch of properties and should have the means to do it rather than, you know, an elderly homeowner. But yeah, fines can add up.
Yeah. Do you all have some ways to kind of look at that, some flexibility, I guess, in terms of how you deal with the fines when you're looking at, is this somebody who owns 10 homes versus a single homeowner?
There is discretion that's needs to be used when meting out these penalties. A lot of times, you know, you think, well, gee, if you give this person a fine, they don't have the money to begin with to fix it. Is that really getting the job done? So, you know, we don't oftentimes know, except for at least one program where we kind of find out. But yeah, we do have some discretion, and we do try to get the worst actors first.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Again, we're talking about code violations. Have you ever had a code violation? Do you have questions about the assistance that's available in the city of Cincinnati, the city of Covington, and the city of Middletown? Give us a call, 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Org. Okay, let's get to the good stuff. Let's start talking about these programs. I want to start with you, Clayton. Tell us about Middletown's program. It sounds like it's fairly new. Is that right?
So this is a program, the Home Improvement Repair Program. And this is a program that we actually rolled out last year. We did two rounds last year. And it really started because our new city council at the time, and still our city council, but they were just elected last year, they really put an emphasis on wanting to clean up the city, make it look nicer for not just developers who want to come in and do business in the city of Middletown, but we want people to live in Middletown and play in Middletown and enjoy Middletown. And so this was really an initiative taken by our community and economic development department. We did two rounds last year, and the funding has changed a little bit. Last year, some of it was from our own general fund. Other times, it was from the community development block grant from the Department of Housing and Urban Development. But we're rolling out round three now. This is the first round that we have done in 2025, and there is $250,000 in CDBG funds that we are using, and people can apply for this grant for up to $5,000 to make home repairs. And so that could be anything from wanting to fix your deck, wanting to fix your shutters. It has to be an exterior home improvement. We can't do interior home improvements, but there are a lot of different stipulations, one being there's an income qualifier. There's a chart on our website at cityofmiddletown.org where you can find that chart, but you have to make, I think it's for a single person household, you have to make less than $50,000. Two person household, I think the household income has to be less than, I think it's like $65,000 or something like that.
Okay.
So there are a lot of different stipulations that we put in this so that someone who perhaps lives in a nicer neighborhood or makes a higher income cannot qualify for this. And we'll make sure that goes to where it's needed.
And what about, you mentioned these are exterior things. What if somebody says, oh, I want to put in a hot tub or something like that? Does something like that qualify?
So when they apply for the grant, they have to, first of all, tell us what the project is. They have to lay out what their plans are, but they also need quotes from contractors to prove that this is a project that qualifies for the program, and here's the funding for it. This is exactly how much money we need, because we understand that while they're eligible for up to $5,000, they may not need all $5,000, which if we have quite a few people who are spending their projects are $3,000, obviously that opens up for more people who might be eligible for the bigger pie.
Sure,
so
stretch
speak.
That money.
Yeah, so absolutely. This is a project that we're very excited about, and that is a big initiative for our city council.
Yeah. And I know Cincinnati has a number of programs for kind of attacking the problem in different ways. Can you briefly kind of tell us about some of those and what the differences are there?
Sure. We've had one for at least 20 years. We've known about this problem a long time, but the ones that the main ones that our department at least puts out there have to do with getting violations corrected. You have to have code violations. That's one of the criteria. You have to meet the income threshold to get the grant. These are grants also. There's actually a couple programs. Main one is it's got a couple. Usually it's budgeted for a couple million dollars. It's the home repairs. I'm sorry, the home services program. It's just, do things that mostly inside, like if your furnace goes out in the middle of winter, you get an emergency repair. You can have two of these emergencies a year if you qualify. Now, the other one's the HARBOR program, and that HARBOR is an acronym for Housing Assistance Repair and Building Order Remission. And what that means, if you apply for this program, you have building orders, while you're in the application and you're in the queue, maybe waiting for funding, if you qualify income-wise, you're going to get a safe harbor from these penalties and code enforcement, And as long as you're working in good faith to go through the loan process or the grant process, there's no point in going any further until you get your grant. So that's in a nutshell how a couple of these work.
Yeah. And you mentioned there is an income qualification. I don't want to quiz you on every single detail, but roughly what is that? Are you looking at folks who are at the poverty level? You know, that what generally is that?
I think it's I'm hazard to say because I'm not 100% sure, but it does also go by the housing and urban development guidelines that they set forth for it. Probably low mod income. I don't have the exact figures, unfortunately.
Okay,
but we can certainly get those for folks that are interested.
Yeah, well, I would imagine you've got a lot of information on the city's website about all these programs. Is that right?
There is information on the building department website.
Yeah. Okay. Super. Well, Archie, you're up next. Tell us about what's available in Covington.
Oh, right. So Covington's homeowner repair program is somewhat code enforced driven. So we can have someone come who needs a furnace inside. We can do inside repairs as well as the roof and such. So we have someone, if they have like a plumbing leak or they need a new furnace or the roof is leaking.
A mess, yeah.
Yeah, right. So we have CDBG dollars so we do have to use that. And the one-person household income is up to $46,980. So we go up to 60% of the area median income.
Yeah. And Jeremy, is there a set amount that people can get? Is it like up to, you know, Clayton was saying up to $5,000 in Middletown? Is there an amount that people can get in Covington?
Ours is very similar to what the other gentleman talked about. Ours is up to $10,000. And we actually have $250,000 allocated also in CDBG. So that's a coincidence. But yeah, we try to put as much in as we can with the available funds that we have. And really, the only difference between our program and the other cities is ours is a little more focused on the specific repair. We have a specific list of repairs that are more emergency in nature, and that's just because we want to help really life safety issues. So we can do things like painting, but we're really looking at furnaces, leaking roofs, sewer laterals that break all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Major emergency type repairs.
Okay. Well, we do have a caller on the line. Let's hear from Mark. Hi, Mark. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. What did you want to talk about?
So, yeah, years ago, we did have a property around Riverside in that area with the river view, and we had a 100-year-old house. Now, when we lived there, it was improved greatly, and everyone really enjoyed the differences. Then we rented it, and we had some issues with the tenants, and then we did have them call the inspector, and we had a few valid complaints. I will give that. So later, because we were taking our time, we were selling it, we had to go to the housing court. And one time when I had a heart-to-heart about our house with the inspector that was, you know, involved with our property, I said to him, I said, I know when you come to this property, you drive past dozens of properties in much worse shape. The end of Eastern Avenue down by Terry's Turf Club, every one of those houses is in needs orders against it and other neighborhoods. And I said to him, why are you not bothering houses that are much, much worse than ours? And he said, well, this is complaint driven, which means somebody called to complain about it. I said, well, then that's selective enforcement, which I think, you know, obviously is a type of discrimination.
Okay. I'm going to stop you there, Mark, because I want to let Ed talk about this. It's got to be complicated to figure out, you know, when you're complaint driven. Can you kind of walk us through that, what housing inspectors deal with?
Yeah, I might give you an analogy. Let's say that there's a police officer that set up a speed trap or whatever on the highway, and five cars go speeding by, you know. He's not going to get them all. He's going to get maybe the one that's going the fastest or, you know. So, again, there's discretion, but that's not even complaint-driven. The complaint-driven, usually when there's a complaint, there's someone that's a victim of the violation in some way or another. Either it's making them unsafe or it's lower, maybe hurting their property values or something like that. But honestly, if the inspectors were to write up everything they saw, we would be so overloaded it would be paralyzing. You know, you just have way, way too much to do and not be able to do anything. So we do limit it to the complaint-driven system, and we work on those that best we can.
Yeah. Archie, is that the same approach in Covington?
Right. So we do work on the complaint-driven code violations. However, for our program, we don't address rental. This is a single-family owner-occupied building. So, and then you do have the people who have lived in the community for a while and understand that there is a program that if they need it, they can go to for help. Mm-hmm. And so they reach out to us. So,
yeah. And Ed, I certainly know what you're saying about, you know, you'd be, if the building inspectors wrote up something for everything, that's all they do all day, certainly. Yeah. But is there ever a circumstance where they're driving to a place where there's been a complaint and they drive by and see, you know, a big chunk of a roof missing or a hole in the side of a building where it mm-hmm. looks pretty serious? Are there some things that reach a threshold that would maybe get their attention?
Yes, there are. In fact, we have a written policy about what we call field observations. The inspectors, an example might be that we write orders on a house, and then right across the street is a house that's practically collapsing. We can't just write the one. And as you mentioned, it could be en route and see a partially collapsed brick building, and you just that anything safety related is going to be the trigger, you know. Or if we're right there and it's, you know, in close proximity to a place that does have problems, we're going to be coming back. So we should get the one next to it too, because it's terrible shape.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Does that sound like what you all do in Covington also?
Yeah, I mean, there's some common sense with the inspectors. I mean, you could write up every single house in every city, literally, even in the fanciest neighborhoods in Cincinnati. A 2-foot square of peeling paint is a code violation. So there is some common sense, and we're not, you know, the inspectors aren't out there just trying to hammer every single homeowner. We're really trying to find the worst of the worst.
Yeah, they don't work on commission, huh, Archie?
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you for that call, Mark. I really appreciate that. We also got an email, from Jennifer. She emailed to ask, why does Cincinnati have different code violations than Middletown? It seems like we have the same issues, but they are not being addressed. Do you sense a lot of difference between the codes in Cincinnati versus Middletown, Ed?
I highly doubt it. Our housing code has been around since the 60s, and it's kind of based on the model codes at that time. It hasn't changed a whole lot. And most of these housing codes, they call them retroactive property maintenance codes, are pretty similar. And honestly, unless you've got some kind of climate difference or whatever, like maybe you're out in California where the houses are newer or whatever situation is, you're going to have pretty much the same kind of problems. Even though we didn't rattle off the exact list, they're there, you know, and it's not going to be that much different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does that make sense to you, Clayton?
Yeah, I agree. You know, I'm actually born and raised in Cincinnati. I just happen to live in Middletown now. Went to high school right down the street at Walnut Hills. But yeah, there are a lot of similarities between the code violations in Cincinnati and in Middletown. Just like he said, just because we didn't rattle off the same list doesn't mean we have different, you know, common violations. But I think it's also really important to recognize that just like Cincinnati, Middletown also has different areas of the city that are different income level, or, you know, predominantly different income levels. So the code violation is also going to be different just within my own city. And so that's really, you know, something to think about. It's not necessarily Middletown as a whole as much as it is. These are common violations in maybe some areas that have more violations than others.
Yeah. What I want to get into a little bit more about what kinds of repairs these programs cover. Clayton, you were talking about exterior repairs. I saw a Channel 9 story that talked about a lady's sidewalk, how that got repaired. Can you give more specifics about the types of things people are trying to fix when they apply for this money?
Yeah, so really, there are projects that, you know, quote unquote, if you're driving down the street and you see it, is it kind of, I don't want to use the word blight, but is it less than stellar to the eye? And so is it something that's going to make, you know, someone double, you know, rethink coming to Middletown? That's kind of way I put it. And so is it a cracked sidewalk? Is it a porch that's, you know, half collapsed? Is it a door off its hinges? Is it, is it, you know, shutters that are, you know, have chipped paint? You know, those kind of things, really beautification projects, if that makes sense. We want people to drive by a home and say, wow, it looks like they've gotten work done. They finally fixed that porch. They fixed that deck. You know, when we rolled out this program last year, there's a street in particular that they, I don't know how many projects they had, but you could really tell a difference before and after of just how much different that street looked. It looked so much nicer, so much prettier, which to me driving down, you know, down to the city building to go to work, it was very pleasing to the eye. It was good to see. If I was a visitor of Middletown, I'd want to come to Middletown more often because it looks like a nice city.
Well, I would imagine some of those repairs also make homes safer because if you've got a cracked sidewalk, especially if you're somebody with mobility issues, you can stumble on that. Jeremy, what about in Cincinnati? Is it really safety-driven? And I'm wondering about, can the program cover internal things like grab bars and things like that that people might need?
Yeah, so
in Covington.
In Covington, we've done a lot of beautification initiatives over the years and total value in that 100%. In the recent past, we've just decided to focus our limited dollars toward life safety issues. So our main repairs are our mechanical issues like furnace, water heaters, electrical, dangerous electrical situations, roofs, gutters, and then also sewer laterals. And we also added recently sidewalks and accessibility. So if people needed handicap ramps or grab bars or things like that, we can do. So really things not necessarily to reduce blight, that's absolutely valid and a wonderful thing, but really we're looking at just helping that individual homeowner. And that's just our current strategy.
Yeah. What about in Cincinnati? Are there, you have a lot of programs in Cincinnati. Are any of them geared towards like these internal improvements, like grab bars and stuff like that?
Yes. In fact, the one I mentioned that we have a contract with people working cooperatively to administer the program, this housing services program. And that program will put grab bars in and safety-related things in the house. And again, their focus is going to be the quality of life, staying in your home, being able to, and living safely in the home. So those are the priorities there for that particular program. And there's facade programs that they've had in the past and things like that, but that are more. The only reason we exist is because we protect the public health, safety, and welfare. We're looking more at the health and safety, and then welfare is important too. But you know, we're looking for looking to keep people safe.
Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that our listeners have information about how to apply for these. So I'm going to put everybody on the spot. Clayton, where can people go to get more information about Middletown's program?
Yeah, you can go to our website, www.cityofmiddletown.org. Scroll down just a little bit to our city news tab. It is right there. First thing on there is applications still being taken for our home improvement repair program. Click on that link and you'll have all the information, including the application. We are now taking applications online. Last year, it was just in person. And so you go to our website to find all that information.
Okay. And I don't know, Archie, you want to take this for Covington? How can people apply or get more information?
Sure. It's www.covingtonky.gov. And you would select the departments, the Neighborhood Services Department, and the federal grants are within that. And you can find, we have Home Buyer, and then we have our home repair program under there as well.
Okay.
And my email address is aice@covingtonky.gov. If you want to email directly, I will send you information.
Wow, strong move to give the email address on the radio there. How about, Ed, how do you find out more about Cincinnati's programs?
Yes, we've done something. We've hired a social worker to help us with our code enforcement. I prefer to call it code compliance because, you know, we're leaning more towards how do we get this thing fixed? So anyway, if they call 513-352-3275, and ask to speak to someone in the Harbor program or the home repair program, they'll get connected probably to Helen Hill, who's our social worker. She does a great job, and if she can't help them, hopefully she can point them in a direction where they can get help.
Yeah. How big, we're running out of time for this conversation. We've covered a lot of ground. How big is the need for this help? Ed, I know the city of Cincinnati has spent a lot of money on helping people over the years, but are there still a lot more needs out there?
Yeah, in a word, it's colossal. I mean, it's just huge. People, and it's so expensive. You know, our limit of what we can do has gone up and up. It's just, we're finding we can't get it done for the price that, you know, we used to, certainly. So yes, it's very big, and it's, you know, it's just the tip of the iceberg, the ones that are applying for this, I'd say.
Yeah, is that true in Covington also?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, the amount of money we get is literally the tip of the iceberg. If we had millions and millions of dollars, we could spend it all. But yeah, we do what we can with what we get.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's what you're doing in Middletown, too.
Absolutely. I'll give a very quick anecdote. Last year, we had a line out the door when we were taking applications in person. So.
Wow, yeah. Tells you that need is great. Well, I've been talking with Cincinnati Buildings and Inspection Department Deputy Director Ed Cunningham, Middletown Communications Manager Clayton Castle, Covington Housing Development Specialist and Housing Manager Archie Ice, and Covington's Federal Grants Manager Jeremy Wallace. Thank you all so much for your time today. You've been great.
Thank you. Thanks, Lucy. Thank you. Great being here. Thanks for bringing this topic up.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez-Cornu. If you miss us live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.